I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hey Garrett, why do you hate the Nintendo 64 controller?
Because it was designed by monkeys with blindfolds.
What? You're insane. What? It was an excellent advance in the world of video game input devices.
No. First, okay. All right. You know what was actually the wonderful advance that was on the Nintendo 64 controller?
Yes, the analog stick.
Yes, the analog stick. That's great. The analog stick by itself was fantastic. The layout of that controller, however, was awful.
No, it's not.
It was three bananas, sir. It was three bananas held together by, you know, some cheap plastic. Now, get me wrong. I realize I'm walking on a lot of people's really strong nostalgia. But you know what I said to those people? I'm walking on my own extremely strong nostalgia. Nintendo 64, for me personally, was where this all started, man. If it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be the giant nerd in the realm of video games that I am. That was, without a doubt, the video game event that had the single largest impact on my developing nerd brain. I love the N64. I still have mine. Still works. Every now and then we bust it out and we have an old school GoldenEye party.
You dislike the three bananas. I could argue that those three bananas were actually kind of clever at the time when they were trying to get the, I think it was a necessary step, and that maybe the brilliance of that incredible tech advancement was lost on a simple 10-year-old's mind, which I can kind of understand. But now you should see the brilliance of it. You have two controllers in one. If you want to control it as the traditional N64, you know, thing with the cross pad and the buttons, then you grab two bananas, left and right bananas. And if you want to do a 3D game, you grab the middle and the left banana. No, the right banana.
Yes, middle and right. Yes. First of all, I love that you're getting confused about how to hold the controller even now, as you're trying to defend it. But secondly, first, I have what I would consider normal size hands. I don't know. You might have really tiny hands, because my bigger issue with it was if I did hold the middle banana, the joystick was way too close to my left hand.
That's true. I think that might have been a Japanese issue where they might have smaller hands and that's who they designed the bananas for. But all right. You know what? Enough about bananas. Enough with the bananas already.
But you didn't get me to throw the racist card at you now for that Japanese comment. Yeah.
That's why I'm interrupting you. Go ahead. Throw the racist card.
That's all I got.
Well, I am Patrick Beja, and this is Pixels, a video game show where we talk about the news that have been happening for the past couple of weeks. And we try to dive behind the news as we do behind the bananas. And to help me peel the banana layers is Garrett Wandrell with me, as he is now every couple of episodes. We're going to be talking about Bungie in trouble. We're going to be talking about Nintendo's results, a bunch of news about Blizzard that are going to let us geek out on that topic. And are you ready to talk video games?
I'm good to go, man. Also, I think that might have been the most damn entertaining opening of Pixels to date.
Possible.
Not to toot my own horn, but...
Well, you know, you talk about controller bananas, and I think then you've got a winner opening. I was clever a podcaster enough to catch the banana as you were throwing it. I think that's the takeaway from this intro.
Nice. A few more banana puns, and we're good to go.
Yeah, I think this is going to be an episode where we're going to come back to this every occasion we get. So how can you... No, I was going to go somewhere that I really don't want to know. Go. How can you talk about bananas when you're talking about Bungie and what's happening there with the president, Harold Ryan, basically stepping down? He had been leading Bungie for, what, 10 years? Maybe more. He was overseeing a bunch of Halo, and he was it's not like a guy they brought in 2 years ago and he had to leave just because something didn't work out. It's my interpretation is that the Destiny F-up is so big that, and granted, I come at this from a place of immense love for Destiny, and I think, Garrett, you've joined me in that cozy, immense love for Destiny place.
It took the Taken King to really turn me around, though. I thought it was off to an exceptionally rocky start.
Yeah, I think everyone would agree about that. But so anyway, Harold Ryan has left Bungie to, quote unquote, spend time with his family, which we all know what that means. It's probably that he was asked to step down. But yeah, basically, Destiny, the launch was super rocky. They have managed to bring it back from the depths, not the depths, because I liked it from the beginning. I thought there were lots of great elements to the game, but since the Taken King, they're focusing their entire team to what will end up being Destiny 2, which has slipped from its unofficial date of September 2016 into sometime in the future. So that means they're not going to be able to hold that one game every year, no matter what happens, plan they had. And the state of Destiny currently is pretty terrible. Everyone's complaining that after the initial content drop of The Taken King, which was fantastic, you've heard me talk about it many times on the show, there hasn't been anything. And that live team that was supposed to inject content regularly into the game has not produced anything of substance. So I think that's why it's considered a mismanagement of the new franchise. And in my opinion, he doesn't want to spend time with his family. He's just been asked to step away.
That's certainly what it looks like, right? We've seen this happen enough times with publicly traded companies that we kind of can sniff it out, right?
So do you think it's justified, or it's hard to say from, you know, standing from here without actual knowledge of what's happening inside the company, but you've been around a few companies and you know a little bit about the industry. What do you think? Is that, did he actually mess up?
I mean, if it's going down the way that the picture that we're kind of painting, that they're pinning a lot of the failures on the leadership and kind of forcing him out. Me in my pretty rosy view of Bungie still, even despite how much Destiny's kind of let me down, I feel bad for the guy. Like, I love Bungie, and I mean, he's been there for a long time now, overseeing many of the Halo titles that I play the living hell out of. So I hate to see the guy go, but at the same time, not really surprised by this.
Yeah. It's for me, it seems like he messed, and we have to say he, but obviously it's the entire team. It's not like, but you have to have someone responsible for this at some point. And so they kind of messed up the release. I think there were lots of reports that the game was not what it was supposed to be initially, which happens in every game, but here the critical acclaim for the game what was dampened by the features, the many features and elements of the game that we thought there should have been in the game. And but they said, you know what, just stay on, fix it, we believe in you, Destiny 2 will work. And we've heard about tools for the game, basically very bad strategic decisions for the way they built all of the tools that they built from the ground up to put Destiny together and keep it alive. We've heard about horror stories of, if you want to change a tiny element of one of the maps of the game, you have basically a process that's going to take 24 hours between loading the world, changing the thing, compiling the world, rendering it, all of that is badly planned. I'm not sure that Harold Ryan specifically is responsible for this, but I'm guessing at some point they had to say, well, you know, we need something to change. And the easiest thing to change is the leadership, I suppose. Does that bode well for Destiny 2 whenever it ends up coming out?
It's hard to tell, right? Because all we have really to go on, like that's 100% official, is just our experience with the game. There was a huge lack of communication, I think, from the Destiny team to the player base. We're all kind of sitting here wondering exactly what's going on. So with that in mind, the only thing we have to judge it on is our experience and what they've delivered on. And yeah, I think they have failed, and I don't have a ton of faith. So with first of all, I mean, Destiny 2, we don't know if it's going to be called that. We don't know if it's actually going to be a sequel. We know nothing. We know absolutely nothing about it. So it's hard for me to know how to feel about it being bumped, because there has been zero official word on it. Like I said, all I really know is that I enjoy the game, but there's no new content. There's no reason for me to revisit the game.
Yeah, and that's what the community has been crying about, with reason, for a few months now. They're talking about the drop of content that is more substantial in the coming months, which I'm sure will happen. I'm not sure it's how substantial it's going to be, but certainly it's not going to be just a silly seasonal event or a speeder race thing that I played once and that was it. It feels to me like they have an incredibly solid gameplay base with Destiny, the vanilla version. They have shown that they can craft a compelling story and compelling single player experience with the Taken King. And it's bad news, but I think in a sense it's good news. They've shown that they're capable of delaying a release if they think they need more time to polish it. So they have gameplay, they have storytelling, or at least single player experience now, and they're willing to take the time and the effort, because I'm you know, 82.5% sure that the live team has been stripped or peeled away like a layer of the banana. No, that doesn't work. To garnish the core team that is developing Destiny 2, or however it ends up being called.
About to say, banana layers are pretty binary. They're either there or they aren't.
Well, so let's go take this to its logical conclusion. You had two bananas. You had one banana, which was the core team working on the game, and the live team that was working on the current game. So one banana, Destiny 2, one banana, the Taken King. And they peeled away the Taken King live team banana to put more content, more people working. No, it doesn't work. All right, you get my meaning. I'm very hopeful for Destiny 2, because there's no reason that they would mess up what is already great about the Taken King. And I love the Taken King. So I'm just making my peace with the idea that I'm not going to be playing it for a few months, for until whatever ends up being Destiny 2 comes out. And that's okay. I have plenty of other games to play and look forward to until then. And I don't mind the fact that it won't be, you know, a Call of Duty, no matter what happens, one new game has to come out every year. If we're a few months delayed, I don't mind.
Nor do I. Definitely don't release subpar products. Go ahead and take the time, but talk to us. Let us know what's going on.
I think you're right. There is definitely a problem of communication. That being said, given how the company is holding together at this point, apparently with the head of the company leaving, it's difficult to craft the right kind of messaging that would be less detrimental than not saying anything at all. Because if they indeed have peeled the live team banana, this is going to be a permanent feature of this episode. What do you say to the player base? You can't say, hey guys, we are not going to be releasing a lot of content for the Taken King from now on. So yeah, have fun with what's there and see you with Destiny 2. Bye. What can they say?
Well, that's their problem for not making enough content. If that's all they can say,
yeah.
Well, then they have dropped the ball.
Yeah, and that's why Harold Ryan is stepping down, I think.
Well,
all right.
Time will tell. Destiny, yeah. here's my period. I want to play your game. Please give me a reason to want to play your game.
Yeah. But it's not a subscription game. They can sell you stupid little emotes with that in-game transaction thing. But I got 2 months of constant use out of the game. I'm happy with that. So
I am too, but there's a very strong hardcore audience that plays it very similar to MMOs you and I have played in the past in terms of endgame and whatnot. And I've been there. I've been in an MMO that I loved and there was no content coming. And that feels really bad. You feel betrayed.
I agree. I just think that at some point the community has to wake up and smell the banana and realize that it's not coming. So just stop it and maybe come back when you have something new, but don't keep banging your head against the wall and, you know, saying there's no, maybe that's me having experience with that kind of thing. So I've already banged my head against the wall. And I know that if there's no content, if there's no reason to log in, then I should just not log in and just go play something else. But I understand it's frustrating when you really love the thing and you want to have something to do.
Anyway. Yeah.
All right, Nintendo. They had their annual results last week, and I noticed a couple of things. First of all, the Nintendo Wii U is definitely... that's not something new, but it's doing super not well. It's definitely the worst selling console in the company's history. It's reached 12.6 million units sold, which isn't bad, but the GameCube at the same point in its life was at 16 million. So even the GameCube, which I'm fairly sure no one remembers as a raging success, was doing a lot better, including at this point. The 3DS is kind of on the way out as well. We have a list of the best sellers for each console. The best sellers for both consoles, Mario Kart 8 is the bestseller for Wii U. That's pretty unsurprising. The bestseller for the 3DS was Pokemon X and Y. Again, pretty unsurprising. Mario Kart 7 has sold 13 million copies and was, even this year, let me find the chart here that my friend Oscar Lemaire did, it was still sixth place in the number of games sold this year. It's been released. It was released quite a long time ago, but this year it still sold over a million copies. And the best-selling game this year was Splatoon for Wii U. It sold 4 million units on an installed base of a little over 12 million units. That's on the Wii U. And that's pretty surprising for a game that has no existing well-known Nintendo characters. It's almost unheard of that they would sell a game these days with a completely new IP and that it would do so well. So
yeah, well, there's two sides of that. One is pretty optimistic and one is pretty cynical. I think the cynical side is that there's just not a whole lot of games coming out for the Wii U.
That is true.
But I think the optimistic side is it's a Nintendo game, and I think that comes with a certain amount of trust.
Yeah. Have you played Splatoon?
I haven't personally. I don't have a Wii U. It is the first Nintendo console I have not owned.
Yeah, you're not alone in that. But
And I don't foresee that changing ever.
I don't think... Yeah, I think at this point it's abundantly clear that that Nintendo is moving on. But it's not all bad for Nintendo. They have basically managed to land quietly and without crashing on that that current generation of consoles, and they're ready to basically, it's going to be next year is going to be the real answer to where is Nintendo going. Are they going to be managed to start fresh, or if they mess up the NX next year, it's going to be very bad news for Nintendo, and I wouldn't be surprised if we end up seeing many more smartphone games and games on other consoles in 2018 or 19. At this point, they're still in a very good position to keep their advantage, their IPs, selling their own consoles, and it wasn't the crash and burn that some people might have thought it would become when the Wii U was not selling. And you're right, there have been no games on Wii U, no game that weren't published by Nintendo. So it wasn't certain.
I don't think it's necessarily it's a point to make saying that, oh, well, they didn't crash and burn because of the Wii U. I mean, they had up until that point, they had been so successful and they'd been very smart with their money. They had basically what a lot of people were just calling a war chest. There's a ton of money just saved up from the success of the Wii and the DS and the 3DS and so on and so forth. So I don't really look at they didn't go under. I don't look at that as a positive.
So I think it's a little bit more than that. It's not like they were sitting on their piles of cash and didn't go under because they had the money to pay for all of their losing ventures, money losing ventures.
I was going to say, I mean, their handheld markets continued to flourish. I mean, even just looking at the numbers, you can see that the top five bestsellers for 3DS over the top five for Wii U, it's more than doubled. Yeah. Across the board in units sold. It's staggering, the difference between the two.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the 3DS has been on the market for a little bit longer, and it does have an installed base that is almost 60 million. So it's a much more successful console, although it was quite touch and go in the beginning. It had a rough first year. But now it's fine. It's just that it's not going to last for much longer. So we're all excited to see what's going to happen with the NX. And we're hearing rumors of it's a French expression. Don't pay attention to me. Of a Smash Brothers being available at the launch of the NX. We don't know if it's going to be the Wii U version or a completely new version, but it seems very clear that they're working. They're all in. They're like, Bungie working on Destiny 2. They're all in on that. And I think it's kind of the same scenario for the NX at this point with Nintendo. So,
yeah, I don't know. I'm just ready to see what the next thing is, because I really do. I mean, I love Nintendo. there's no sense of gaming nostalgia stronger in my brain than the experiences I have had with Nintendo consoles. But outside of, well, I don't know. I don't think it's that bad. I think for me, it's not a huge deal that I'm not interested in buying the Wii U. I still love my 3DS, so I'm excited to see what they come out with next.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and this year is going to be the... I feel like I keep repeating the same thing, but it bears repeating. Every sign confirms a little bit more that this is the situation that Nintendo is in, and those annual results weren't different.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I'm curious to see the future. I want to know what their plans are for the next console, how they think they're going to make themselves more desirable in the world that we're in, where the PS4 and the Xbox One are doing so well, but offering very similar experiences.
That's the big question, isn't it? How are they going to, because they really need third-party developers if they want the console to be, that was one of the, there were basically on the Wii U two big mistakes that were linked. First, it wasn't powerful enough, and it wasn't PC architecture friendly enough, so third-party developers couldn't really develop easily on the console. And I think that lost them a bunch of support. And then, yeah, the power was an issue as well, because even if they wanted to adapt the game, they had to change so much. It was so far behind the other consoles of the generation, that it was a difficult process. And they sold so few, with the partly because of the confusion between Wii and Wii U. Was it an add-on? Was it no one knew? And they had the tablet controller, which was clearly based on the idea that everyone was using a tablet. And so you had a second screen experience, and everyone was going for a second screen. I don't know if you remember, there were a couple of years where everyone was creating a companion app for their game. Like, seriously, everyone was doing that. Actually, even The Division, which I don't think we've heard about that companion app anymore. It's been quietly forgotten and swept under the rug because that no one knew at the time. But it was kind of not a fad, but everyone tried it and we realized it doesn't really work. So they went away. But the Nintendo Wii U was entirely based on that concept. So it sort of dragged them down for the life of that console. They couldn't bring the cost of the console down enough that it would be interesting. It was a bunch of factors that made it problematic. So now with the NX, which way are they going to go? Are they going to try and have a more PC-like architecture to make it attractive to everyone and to third-party developers? Or are they going to, I guess they could do both, but are they going to be very specific with different control schemes, with a different idea entirely on the console, and maybe make it so different that they're still going to have difficulties getting third-party support? A lot of my friends are saying Nintendo can't not be different. They have to be different, because if they aren't, then they really have no advantage over the other systems and they're going to drown in that thing. I would argue it's possible, but they also have their IPs, which is what makes them different. But
that's a discredit to Nintendo. It's the quality of their games. I think your friends who are saying that are putting far too much weight on the gimmicks of their most recent console efforts. I mean, up until the Wii, Nintendo was like, you still just had a controller. You just sat down with your controller and you had an amazing experience. And I don't think there'd be anything wrong with a return to that. Bring out a more traditional controller and just keep making your awesome games, but make sure that your console is normal enough that third parties want to develop for it. So you can, I don't know.
No, I agree. I also think that there is a very large amount of rose-colored glasses put on the entirety of Nintendo's hardware innovations. For me, the only one that was actually significant was that analog controller. It was really significant, and it brought a lot to gaming in the long run. It did evolve the industry. The other one that people go to are the Wii, obviously, and the motion gaming was huge, but it was huge in the sense that the Rubik's Cubes was huge. It was a gimmicky toy, and it didn't turn into anything in the gaming industry beyond its, you know, few years lifespan of the console, when the console was incredibly successful. The two screens, I think I've mentioned this on the show before, the two screens on the DS were gimmicky. I don't think any game or very few games were actually made better because of those two screens. There were lots of games that took advantage of the screens, but it's not like they couldn't have existed on a one-screen device. And the 3DS, obviously, I don't even need to get into it. It's just ridiculous. No one uses the 3D version of it. So,
and they even rolled out a non-3D version of it.
Exactly. But yeah, the NX, you know, we'll see. And now is the time to be excited. And hopefully we will be flabbergasted when they finally announce it.
Bring it on, Nintendo. By the way, totally buying Pokemon again this month.
We discussed this last time.
I know. I'm just reminding everyone. I'm buying Pokemon again this month, and I'm excited about it.
You know, that's actually beyond the Pokemon craze. I think the numbers of the Mario titles and other titles that keep being the best sellers, even now, 4 years after, I'm thinking about Super Mario Kart 7 on 3DS being a bestseller this year as well. It speaks to the value of Nintendo titles in general. They never go down in price. Even if you want to buy them secondhand, they're going to be like in a store $5 less than the full price thing.
And that's another big compliment for them. I mean, how many times
Absolutely.
well and make it relevant. Nintendo has, for the most part. Yeah, there's, you know, every now and then there's like a not as great Mario game, but I don't know. Like, could you make 12 of the same movie set in the same world and not bore the crap out of people? I don't think you can, but Nintendo can make 12 Marios and make me still want to play it.
You know, Super Mario 3D World, I've said this many times, on the Wii U is one of the best Mario games ever made. Brilliant design, amazing game, you know, game mechanics, mind-blowing. It's one of their best games ever. Same with Mario Kart 8, by the way.
Yes.
And Splatoon is super fun as well, so... Anyway, all right, let's move on to another one of our gaming darlings, Blizzard. Blizzard Entertainment has announced a bunch of stuff on their different games. And as always, disclaimer, I think I'm still going to give the disclaimer for another, until it's been 2 years since I've stopped working at the company. So disclaimer, I used to be a Blizzard employee. And
I didn't know this. I can't thank God you disclaimed it.
Ethics. It's complicated. Overwatch. Hey, do you know Overwatch is coming back? The beta is going to be returning very soon.
I do, Patrick. We should probably do a podcast about it.
I believe we should. How about Thursday?
We should name it Overwatchers.
That is an excellent idea. We'll be recording it Thursday because on Thursday we will have had one full day of playing the beta because it is supposed to come back. At the time we're recording this, it will be tomorrow, February 9th, on Tuesday. And I have, as I've said in a few at a few different occasions, I have completely cleared my schedule after tomorrow. I have nothing to do until, you know, the end of the week, because the only thing I'm going to be doing is play Overwatch.
Nice.
So there's going to be a couple of new things. First of all, a bunch of... A bunch of balance fixes to the different characters. I'm really looking forward to that already. But the big new features are going to be the progression system, which we have heard about and discussed at length in Overwatchers. So we knew that was going to be included when the beta came back. The one thing we didn't know about was the fact that there is going to be an additional mode with at least a couple of maps added to the game as well. And that's a welcome surprise, because I think the one thing that people were saying probably was lacking in the game modes was diversity. A few, maybe not so much more maps, but definitely one additional game mode or two to make the game a little bit more engaging and not endlessly repeating the same thing. So how do you feel about that? Is it good, bad, exciting?
I always get angry at more content. How dare they? No, of course I'm excited. That was definitely something that was noticeable in the beta previously, was the relatively small number of maps and modes.
Yeah. So two new maps, one new mode. We've already discussed what it could be. It could be a capture the mech kind of thing that someone mentioned on Reddit once, which would be an idea, which is kind of capture the flag, but you have, instead of a flag, you have to get into a sort of robot mech thing and bring it somewhere, and it has a different set of abilities. That could be fun.
And but, I hope just so I can see what it's like on D.Va's side to be in a mech already and then inside another mech, so you can mech. Yo, dog, I heard you like mechs.
Yeah, definitely. That would be fun. She could transfer mechs. That would be possible as well.
Pops out and she's not in her. Oh, that'd be interesting.
But we don't know that it's going to be the case. That was just one idea, one random idea. It could be something completely different. We'll have to see. And you know what? You can just listen to us on Overwatchers on Thursday and we will tell you all about it, because unless the world explodes and the Blizzard servers don't hold up to the return of the beta, which they should. They should be okay, because they were running last in December. So, but another piece of information, you will still be in the beta if you had been in the beta before, and they are going to be inviting a bunch of other heroes. So, a bunch of other players who are going to be heroes, because the world
will be heroes, unless you're not. Then, I don't know. You'll be like the rest of us, normal players who get their butts handed to them?
I don't get my butt handed to me. This might be the only game where I don't. Although when the beta returns, maybe I will. I don't know. We'll see. Hearthstone. What?
Heroes. I said, no, they nerfed all my favorite heroes.
Don't nerf Genji. He's fine. Yeah, Hearthstone. There's a bunch of stuff happening on Hearthstone. Can you run us through all the changes?
Oh boy, can I, Patrick. So we're getting a new format, which format, that's just that word by itself, is a big deal in card games. In Magic, there are many of them, and it's basically a way for the people who create the card game to deal with the inevitable overload of cards. Any card game that has frequent content updates and adds more and more cards to the game, it's going to get card bloat, and it's going to be harder and harder in the cases of Hearthstone for the developers to create new cards because they have so many other cards that they have to keep in mind. So it's like, well, no, we can't do that because it mixes with Dr. Boom, and all of a sudden you just break the game. It's just the best deck. It's objectively the best way to play the game. And that's an issue. So what you do is you create multiple formats so that it kind of eases that load and allows you to iterate and have a metagame that isn't as stagnant and it can change. So what's happening with Hearthstone is they're taking how we currently play it and they're labeling that wild. And in the wild format, you'll be able to play with every single card ever released. Nothing's technically changing. If you just want to keep playing Hearthstone the way it currently is, and also enjoy the new cards that come on down the road on top of everything that currently exists. But the big change is we're getting a second format and a second ranked ladder, and that's being labeled as Standard. And what's going to be happening with Standard is it will, the only cards that you will be able to play or will be considered quote unquote legal, if this was a paper card game and we had to use terminology like that, will be expansions and adventures from the last 2 years, plus all of the basic cards and the classic cards. So what is going to happen is the beginning of a new year, once the first new expansion of a new year comes out, the whatever is more than 2 years old just drops off.
Basically, when the new expansion comes out at some point in spring, probably, that means that the only cards you're going to be able to use in Standard mode are going to be the cards from 2016 and 2015. And everything from before that is going to be unavailable in the Standard mode, right?
So for what is happening this year when the next expansion comes out, which will be soon, we will be losing access to Goblins versus Gnomes cards and Naxxramas cards in Standard, but only in Standard. Arena is unaffected. And now there will be Wild, where you can still go and rank up and hit Legend like usual, complete daily quest. Nothing's really changing for Wild. Wild will have everything, and things are going to get pretty crazy in Wild.
So I guess I have a couple of questions. The first one is, I'm sure this is helpful for balance for the Standard mode. It's going to be hopefully a little bit more balanced than it could have become if the craziness continued. But it's also very helpful for new players because there are a lot of players who start and who are completely lost with a bunch of, you know, there are so many cards, you don't even know where to start, what to get, what to do. So, yeah, that's going to be helpful there. And then Wild, they're still going to be balancing that as well, right?
Absolutely. One of the biggest outcries and concerns with this news was that a lot of people felt that Wild was just going to be left to its own devices, and it's like, oh well, if something's broken, who cares, it's Wild, it's supposed to be crazy. But there have been multiple tweets specifically from Ben Brode saying that if Wild gets out of hand, and it's, he said, quote, not as awesome as we think it will be, that they will do something about it.
Okay, so it's not going to be, yeah, it's not going to be the excuse basically, yeah, whatever, this is Wild, it's crazy. Because as you were saying earlier, it could become that there is like one type of dominant deck or one specific deck, and it's broken and you have to play it or lose. And if you don't play it, you're going to face it all the time anyway, whatever happens. And that's not fun. So I'm sure they're going to keep an eye on what happens there.
Right. And it is possible that can still happen, and but it's possible that it could happen now, and it's possible that could happen in standard as well. But they can always address it. They can fix things. They also did announce that they will be rebalancing some of the classic and basic cards since the decision has been made that they will not be going away in standard.
I'm actually really excited about that part of it.
Me too. The arena player in me is really hoping some of those basic cards will get rarities assigned to them so they're not all just considered common. Looking at you mages with 12 flame strikes.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see what happens there, but it's definitely a big change for Hearthstone and hopefully a way to keep the game both balanced and accessible. I think that accessibility thing is a big big part of it. Do we have any idea when they're going to be implementing those changes?
No, like you said, I wouldn't be surprised. Well, it's going to be happening when the next expansion drops.
Right, so and we don't know when that is.
Right, exactly. They haven't put a date on it. I'm hoping it's sooner rather than later because the meta's it's pretty figured out at this point. It's not in a bad place. There's a lot, as it currently sits, there's a lot of viable decks to play. You will be hitting a lot of Secret Pally. You will be hitting a lot of Druid, but there's a lot of options. So I don't think the meta's in a terrible place. But me personally, always ready for new cards. I'm also so excited about formats that I cannot wait for them to be added to the game.
All right, well, we'll see what happens then. Last little bit of info on our Blizzard Corner. I've, as you know, dear listener, I have gotten enamored with Heroes of the Storm recently. And this is probably not a bit of news that I would put in there if it wasn't the Blizzard Corner. But you know what? It's exciting for me and I think for Garrett as well. So let's discuss it briefly. There's a bunch of stuff happening in Heroes of the Storm. The new characters on one hand and the patch notes, it seems like they're taking a more deliberate stance on balance in the game and changing things on a very regular basis.
Yes, the game is no stranger to having massive balance updates like this. What was more surprising before the main patch that brought in Li Ming and a huge sweep of balance updates was that the 2 weeks leading up to it, we saw minor balance updates, and that is new. That is the big deal.
That's what I meant. They've been doing one every week, right?
Yes, exactly. Now, granted, they're significantly smaller than what we saw on the second, where we saw two heroes completely revamped, Nova and Rhaegar, not to mention a ton of other balance updates. But the minor ones that are coming, it seems like every week, have been doing a lot to help the game and help the meta.
So I think the new character, Li Ming, is one I've seen a lot of enthusiasm for more than in a long time in Heroes. And I want to ask you in general, the state of Heroes for people who might not have tried it, who might not even be interested, or maybe, you know, they're cautious about it. Do you think it's better, worse to start playing now? Is it in a good place? What do you think about the game in general? Because we know, you know, it's probably, we don't know, but it's probably not the success that Blizzard was hoping for with their entry in the MOBA space. It's not doing badly by, you know, any stretch of the imagination, but it's probably not doing as well as one might have hoped. So where do we stand on that game?
I don't think there's ever really been a bad time to get into it. I mean, if you're interested in MOBAs, but League of Legends and Dota seem daunting to you and you don't like all the weird rules that don't seem to make sense from a development side, but they're just there because it's the history of the game.
Mm-hmm. They're just there because they've always been there, basically.
Exactly. There's a lot of weird things that basically seem like bugs that have become part of the meta strategy on how to play the game. And that personally drives me nuts. I love Dota 2. I think it's one of the best esports out there. But some of the things that have just never been addressed and been chalked up to the history of the game, I want to scream. Heroes is a game that you can get into. You can have that MOBA experience, but you can do things that make sense, like just kill things because they're there. And why wouldn't you want to kill an enemy in a video game? you level together as a team, which just you could be seen as a positive or a negative, depending on who you are. I personally like it. But it's a fun game. It's fine. All of my gripes with the game are on the more initiated side, people that have been playing the game for a long time. I think if you're a new player, you won't notice any of my the things I would consider nitpicks and issues with it. So I just dive in. It's a great time. It's very fun. There's a lot of heroes that are in a very good place. So I don't know. Water's fine. Everyone get in here.
All right. Cool. And as I was saying, Li Ming is the darling of the podcasts I listen to. Actually, the two Heroes of the Storms podcasts I listen to are in love with Li Ming. So
she has had 6 days to accrue statistics on hotslogs.com, which is an unofficial statistics page, but it's the best tool we have since we do not work at Blizzard and Blizzard does not give us public statistics. She has debuted to a 55.8% win rate based on the statistics over the last 7 days, which is 6 days for Li Ming because she came out on Tuesday in Hero League. That's just ridiculous, especially considering the last, I think, five heroes all had very low win rate debuts.
So she's going to get nerfed is what you're saying.
I wouldn't go that far. It is looking like one talent right now is going to get reined in a bit just because the pick rate is ridiculous. S of Johan at level four, if anyone's wondering, gives her arcane orb ability the pull in effect. And Dustin Browder has been quoted saying that it is being looked at and will probably be tweaked very soon.
All right. We're getting maybe a little bit too into the arcane elements of the game.
Puns.
What? I didn't hear. Puns?
I said it was much better than your banana puns.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And if you want to hear more about this amazing game, go listen to Core with Scott Johnson or Into the Nexus with this one here, Garrett Wandrell. Both
yeah,
are excellent.
But maybe in the other direction because I'm here and I can pimp it more.
Absolutely. Into the Nexus. You know, I'll say this to you, Garrett. Between those two shows, I think I really like yours best. But don't say Scott. Don't tell Scott Johnson.
Oh, nice. Well, unfortunately, this is recorded permanently, so I'm just going
to... Scott doesn't listen to this, so it's fine. all right. Let's talk about The Division, The Witness, XCOM, and a bunch of other things. The Division had its beta weekend last week, I believe. I was moving to another country, so I didn't get a chance to play it. But it was pretty well received, I think. The impressions in general are as follow. Basically, you have to remember that it is... If Destiny is an RPG FPS that is really more of an FPS, then The Division is an RPG, well, TPS. Yes, but it's really more of an RPG. It's less about the twitchy gameplay and the lining up your target, your crosshair on the enemy's face, and more about accruing items that are better, that have rarity and all of this, which there is in both games, but definitely more RPG-centric for The Division. PvE seems to be good. The PvP, however, the part where you have to fight PvE enemies and potentially live enemy, actual player enemies at the same time, seems like...
If it wasn't player enemies?
What do you mean?
You just said, and actually players, I'm like... Well, aren't we talking about PvP? Isn't that required for it to be PvP?
Well, that's the thing. In the Division, you have a mode where that's called the Dark Zone, where you actually go in and do PvE, and you get items from the enemies you kill, but those items aren't usable until you go to a specific zone and have them extracted. And when you have them extracted, it takes about, 60 seconds to a minute and a half, during which the entire map with other players is alerted to your presence and the fact that you're extracting loot. And if they want, they can come to where you are and shoot you in the face and take your loot. So that's where the PvE/PvP element comes in. So it's not 100% PvE, but it supposedly creates a fun dynamic where you can choose to interact with the other players or not and be safe. And if you choose to do that, obviously there are going to be consequences. They're going to try to balance it with bounties that get on you if you do that, and if you attack other players, stuff like that. So it's a different, there, it's been done before, but it's a somewhat different approach to PvP, which tries to create that tension, and apparently it kind of works. So we'll see how well it does once the game actually comes out. And so the overall impressions about the game with the beta, that was limited to levels 8 at this point, which might be reminiscent of the Destiny beta for those who remember that. It was also capped at level 8, and people were hoping there would be a huge amount of content behind it, which it ended up not having, but the similarities might end there. Might end at the level cap, I mean, for the beta. But yeah, the impressions are, it's certainly a fun game. People are having fun with it. The one caveat is that concern about longevity of the game. How are you going to be able to play that game for more than a couple of months? Or is it going to be a couple of months worth of fun, which is already great? But then that's it, and you just move on to something else. So I'm curious about the game for sure, but I'll wait until I read the reviews before actually committing money to it, I think.
I'll pick it up. Boy, I'm pretty excited about it, to be honest. And quite a few of my friends have already said that they're going to be picking it up. So it seems like the kind of game that is better with friends.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. That is also coming out of the reviews of the first, the people who were in the beta. And that's always the case, though. So I always know that, you know, there are some games, Destiny included, I keep bringing it up because it has many similar elements to The Division by everything that we've seen. And I've enjoyed Destiny alone for a lot of the time I've played. So it's always better with friends, but it might be really fun already playing alone. Hopefully, it will be the case. The Witness is out, the game by Jonathan Blow, the indie game legend behind Braid. That game was 7 years in the making. He invested all of his earnings from Braid and then some. And apparently it's selling well. It made as much money in the first week as Braid did in the first year. Obviously, it's a completely different situation. The game is more expensive, all of this. But yeah, it's going well. It's reviewing well. It's kind of a modern take on Myst, almost. It's basically an island with lots of puzzles, and you have to go and figure out the puzzles, and it's a real brain twister. I'm not sure. I might wait for a Steam sale to get it, but I'm curious. It's just the way Jonathan Blow's mind works is interesting to me. So we'll see. Are you into those kinds of games, Garrett?
Typically, no. However, The Witness is just so unique looking. I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I'm not so excited that I'm going to run out and buy it immediately, but I'll probably pick it up at some point, knowing me, probably next Christmas during the Christmas sale when I have a lot of like random time to just spend on things I missed.
Summer sale can do that. Why do you want to wait until Christmas?
Because I work during the summer, and Christmas I usually have like a long week off, and I can just kind of sit around and play games that I don't do shows about.
What about XCOM 2? It's coming out soon. It's getting pretty good reviews.
Is it not out over there?
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. You're right. It came out yesterday. Sorry.
Oh, gotcha. I didn't know if there was a delayed release for some reason. XCOM 2, incredibly excited for. Flip side, haven't bought it yet because I know how much time I sunk into the first one, and I don't have that time at the moment.
Yeah, it came out last week, actually. It's been a complicated week for me, as I've said. Yeah, it's, you know, it's a difficult thing because it's a sequel that is apparently an excellent sequel that manages to do everything it needs to do to be a successful one, But it's also, quote unquote, still a sequel. So if you didn't like the first one, if you're not into those kinds of games, then you're probably not going to be interested no matter how good the sequel is. That's the way it feels anyway. And no one has said anything that would lead me to think that someone who wasn't interested in the first one would be interested in this one. So it's an excellent game that is easy to discard if you're not into those kinds of games, and I think that's my case. So,
okay, well, I was about to say, I'm like, has that ever really been the case, though? Is anyone surprised that the sequel to something isn't different enough that if you didn't like the first one, you won't like the second one?
I don't know. I think there are some games that where the sequel transcends the initial one. Maybe it's the case for games that weren't absolutely brilliant from the beginning. I think XCOM 1 had it was reviewing incredibly well, and people loved it already, so don't break something that's not broken. don't fix something that's not broken. But there are a few games that come to mind. Maybe Uncharted. Uncharted 1 was very, average. The second one was brilliant. That's going to make some people scream, but I didn't get into Diablo until Diablo 3. I don't know. I think there are some games where it might be the case, but
for me, the most glaring examples of that are games that have just been around for a while and made the jump from 2D to 3D, and it was more because of the capability of the hardware versus the games actually being different. Zelda to Ocarina, like the original Zelda's to Ocarina of Time. That's a huge, like, just mind blow. But honestly, the formula of the games are pretty similar.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there are, it feels, maybe it's because I don't know it well enough, but XCOM 2 does feel a little bit like it almost could have been an expansion to XCOM 1. And I think people are going to come and scream at me, and I understand that I might not be, it might not be the case. It might not be accurate. It's just the way it feels to me from the outside. And, again, I don't know if it's accurate, but I there was Enemy Within after XCOM 1, Enemy Unknown, right? So I don't know. It's if it's the case that I should get into XCOM 2 if I didn't like XCOM 1, then please come let me know. It just feels more similar than some other sequels might have been, which is unfair of me to say, I guess. Batman Arkham Knight is not going to be coming out on Mac or Linux. So if you were one of the two people still waiting for that to happen, then I'm sorry for you.
I was going to say, poor Mac users. First, it's the first Blizzard game ever not coming to Mac, Overwatch, and now Batman. God.
I think the two might be linked. As I mentioned before, my analysis of why Overwatch is not coming out on the Mac is the issue with the graphics GPUs that the Macs are currently equipped with, which are a huge majority of integrated Intel GPUs, which are a lot less powerful than the discrete mobile GPUs that NVIDIA and Radeon, AMD make. And that alone makes it difficult to port a game. You can't really port a game to a platform when, 70% of your platform's computers are only going to be able to run the game at the lowest of low settings. And especially if it's a demanding game like an FPS. But in that case, if that's the case, Arkham Knight is a game that is kind of demanding graphics-wise. And if you can't port it on the Mac because of the poor graphical capabilities, then the Mac and the Linux port go together. If you can't port it on the Mac, it's basically a Linux port, to very small degrees of variations on the porting side of things. But so if you can't have a Mac version, it doesn't make sense to make only a Linux version, I think.
Right there with you.
Fire Emblem Fates is not going to have the Japanese voiceovers in the Western release. That's a travesty. What does that mean?
I am one of the few people I'm loud and proud of the fact that I watch all my animes dubbed, and you can all deal with it. So I don't care.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, man, because animes are really pretty. I don't want to freaking read while watching them.
You know, that is something that I will never understand. Well, I understand it happens, but...
I will never understand all of the people who ruined anime for me in college to the point where I didn't start watching it again until recently that are so zealot-like in their pursuit of jumping on anyone who doesn't watch subtitled anime. I don't think it's that big of a deal. If you can't understand the language, why is it that important?
Because a lot of the cultural flavor and significance of that piece of art comes through the language. And I think you're really losing part of that whole if you break off a piece, which is the voice and the idiosyncrasies of the intonations and the, you know, all of that is part of it. If you break off a piece, then you're losing a lot of what makes that creation what it is. And I always try to view things or when I can, you know, see things or read things in their original version, because I think it's a big part of the creation, the piece of art. It's the same for English or American creations. If I watch a TV show or a movie, I really don't want to have it dubbed because, first of all, it's not the same. Second of all, you're subject to the quality of the dubbing, which is often, I've seen animes in English, they're really often not as good. And this applies to video games as well. It's often dubbed by people who are actors for children's shows, which have a very specific kind of intonation and pattern of speech, which makes it, I think, a lot less enjoyable.
I really disagree with that.
Okay.
But a lot of the voice actors for American dubs are, at this point, pretty well seasoned in anime and are known very much, very well for anime. I would be hard pressed. I don't know. I would definitely go to bat and hold up something like the dub of Death Note as an example of an incredibly well done dubbing effort.
Okay, maybe I'm not. I don't have enough experience in that field to judge all of it. Maybe I'm just aware of some of the things I've seen. I don't know, things like Naruto and these kinds of dubbed animes that are. You always have that specific type of, you know, way of speaking that is unnatural and that feels like it's been dubbed for a Saturday cartoon show. Things like the way they speak in Avatar, which is an excellent show, even with the dubbing. Well, it's just part of it. Not the dubbing, but the voice acting. But it is, do you know what I mean? It doesn't feel like someone would speak like that in real life, right?
If you're about to say anything other than Avatar is the single greatest piece of animation in the history of the medium, then we're gonna come to blows, sir. We're gonna come to blows.
I think Avatar is the single greatest piece of animation in the history of the medium, in spite of that slightly annoying fact that the voice acting is, as it always is in animation, somewhat not, it doesn't feel natural. I love the show. I love the initial series. I love Legend of Korra. I think what they've done with the world and the characters is beyond brilliant. I still think the dubbing is not as, but you know, basically let's conclude this discussion, but you know what I mean when I'm saying that it doesn't feel like they're acting specifically for that kind of medium and not that they're acting naturally as their character would in what they do, you know, like what they do in a movie or a TV show, right? Does that make sense or is it just me that feels that way?
I get your point, but I guess for me, again, it just comes down to it's more of a visual experience. And if I'm wasting my time reading, it really ruins the experience for me.
Right. Yeah. I guess I can understand that.
At that point, I'd rather just go and read the manga if I'm concerned about the preserving the sanctity of the original product. Hmm.
Well, I guess it's easy for me to say this as well because I do speak English and I do understand a little bit of Japanese. So I managed to get enough of it even without the subtitles that it works for me. But I would really encourage. I wouldn't be as, you know, as much of an a-hole as apparently some people are with you when you say you don't want to have to read the subtitles. But I would really encourage everyone to try and experience it the way it was conceived. Rather, it's kind of like, okay, last bit of it, and then I'll drop it. It's kind of like if someone took a piece of art that you did, Garrett, and sort of changed one of the colors into something else. It might still be good, but it's not going to be, at least it's not going to be the thing yet that you envisioned and that you put down as an artist, right? So that's...
I don't think you can compare it. I don't think there is a comparison because we're dealing with language, which is a thing that you either understand or you do not. Art is very subjective. Language is not. If you're just... like, I don't speak Japanese, so I am taking in nothing when I'm listening to someone speak Japanese.
Aha. Well, there I would disagree. I think you take in a lot, and I think a lot of people take in a lot just by the different sounds and, you know, the mood that it creates. But all right, we could fight about this all day, but let's leave that for another episode at some point. Doom hits May 13th, and obviously, Garrett, you're going to get the collector's edition that includes a giant demon statue, right?
Well, if I didn't already anger all of the anime fans out there, let me anger all of the Doom fans by saying I have never given a crap about Doom.
Holy poop. Really? You were too young, I guess.
No, I wasn't. But I was too young to be, A, allowed to play it.
Right, so you were too young.
Instead, I played Dark Forces. That was my sprite-based first-person shooter.
I don't even know what Dark Forces is.
It's a Star Wars shooter, sir, that eventually led to the Jedi Academy series.
Ah, okay. Well, Doom is my jam, so there you go. I don't know about this version of the game. I'm not going to get the collector's edition for sure. But, you know, a new Doom is always something exciting. And I think Doom 3 that came out a while ago was okay. I expect this one to be fun-ish. But... I'm not sure it's going to be... I'm not going to buy it blind, basically. Mirror's Edge Catalyst. Have you gotten into Mirror's Edge? Are you excited about Mirror's Edge Catalyst?
Never played it personally. Watched my roommate in college beat it. I thought it was gorgeous. I thought it was an incredibly fresh game. But I also felt that I didn't really need to go play because I'd already seen everything it kind of had to show me. But yes, totally excited for Catalyst. I will probably be picking it up because I no longer have roommates, thank God. So if I want to see a game, I need to play it myself. Or watch it, but I'd rather play it myself.
There's a story trailer that came out a few days ago that sort of got me excited about it a little bit more than I already was, because the story trailer shows pretty good acting and motion capture, and it seems like they've really put a lot of effort into making the experience, the story. I mean, the story is always going to be a little bit hammy, I think, but it feels like they've gotten modern actors, modern video game acting, by which I mean having actual actors play out the thing, or at least sync everything around their voices. It feels believable in a way that other games that have great storytelling elements do. And that encourages me in the idea that it is going to be a very polished experience. So I'm very curious about the game, and even more now that I've seen that that story trailer, which I encourage you to go check out if you're interested in the game.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it.
Titanfall 2 news. The writer for the single player campaign has said that, there might be a TV series involved. And of course, he's, confirmed that there's a single player campaign, which wasn't the case in the first Titanfall. But so he is basically, he worked on a bunch of TV shows, and he is now working, potentially, it's not picked up yet, but there might be a TV show around in the world of Titanfall when the game launches, or after, or around the game. I'm not sure. Not sure what to think. I'm just excited that we basically have another piece of confirmation that we're going to have a single player campaign in the game. That is much more exciting to me than the TV show potential.
Right there with you. I actually really enjoyed the first Titanfall. I'm just excited to see it iterated upon. But I liked all of the inference to the world. It seemed to have a very cool world, but there's really no story mode. I realized that they were like these light kind of story vignettes in the levels themselves if you played the specific mode. But I'd like to see a story play out in that universe.
Yeah, it's it might be a difficult thing to do to create a compelling story mode that makes sense with the mix between the when you're driving the mech and when you're on foot, and how you combine those experiences and make them make sense in that world. But definitely, I think even for Overwatch, I would have thought that the game, I wouldn't like it as much because there wasn't a single player campaign. Turns out I couldn't have been more wrong. But I don't think that many games can do that. I think mostly for the FPS games, for me to enjoy them, I probably need a single player experience. And I loved Titanfall 1 when it first came out for the, you know, 2 or 3 weeks that I played it like everyone else. But if that can be crafted into a compelling single player experience, then I think I will also play more of the PvP side of it. Ironically, I need a single player thing to get me into the mood, and then I can play some more PvP. So
I'm right there with you. Not to mention, these are a lot of the guys that are behind the first two Modern Warfares,
yeah,
which had very strong stories on top of having fantastic multiplayer modes and kind of setting up Call of Duty to be what it is.
Yeah.
So I remember I got into Titanfall and I was like, oh, but where's the story? What a travesty. These guys had some really great narratives in the past.
You're right. I mean, Infinity Ward developed the Call of Duty franchise for Activision at the time. And it was maybe that's why it was even more disappointing that there wasn't a single player campaign in Titanfall. But, they have a lot of the mechanics figured out with the first one. So maybe they can spend the time and resources on polishing, on building on that that initial game and making it everything it should have been in the first place. And it's also very likely going to be coming out on multiple platforms, unlike Titanfall 1, which was PC and Xbox One only. And finally, a new game that was announced, which I think could be interesting, called Dead by Daylight. It's a game that on... It's kind of a, you might think it's going to be Evolve with serial killers. Evolve, if you don't remember, was a game by the team behind the initial Left 4 Dead. But they created that gameplay gimmick where you would be four players fighting one player, so 4v1 instead of, it's asymmetrical PvP, and there was the monster and you had the hunters, and the game flopped because of a bunch of reasons. It wasn't fun enough and it was basically milked by, it seemed like they held up a lot of the elements of the game to sell them back as DLC. And that's one of the instances where apparently they went too far in that direction and the game suffered for that reason. Dead by Daylight, the comparison that we can have is the asymmetrical aspect of it. It's basically a survival asymmetrical PvP game where there are four survivors and one serial killer in the, apparently it seems to be in the same kind of spirit as horror movies like Friday the 13th or, the slasher movies, basically.
Right, and there's a Friday the 13th game being developed right now, which is exactly where my brain went to when I heard about this.
Is it going to be PvP with asymmetrical gameplay,
yes,
though?
Exactly. Oh, exactly what it's going to be.
Interesting, I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah, and plays Jason, and then the rest are camp counselors trying to escape from him. The big thing to note with Dead by Daylight, though, is that its game worlds are generated procedurally, so it will be random. You're not going to know what's happening. It's going to be, I think it's going to be terrifying, because the Friday the 13th game, is just going to have, I think, just maps. But Dead by Daylight will have just random worlds that you just have to figure out every time you spawn into a game how to escape.
Yeah, and there are tons of interesting kinds of mechanics. I mean, if you go look out the development video, it doesn't show a lot. It shows concepts. It talks about what they want and hope to achieve. So it might very well end up that the game is just as disappointing as Evolve has been. But it does look like it has. They talk about the interesting dynamics that come into play when you have the four survivors. One of them falls into a trap and the other ones have to decide if they help him because they want to be stronger together, or if they just abandon that person and leave them to the serial killer that has a different kind of, you know, they're going to have different attributes. It's basically a monster just like an Evolve, but maybe reined in a little bit. So anyway, I thought the idea could be really fun. Go check out the video as well. And I'm hoping that it's going to be basically a successful version of that asymmetrical PvP gameplay that Evolve tried to implement but didn't manage to make stick. So we'll see what happens.
I'm a huge fan of horror films, specifically 80s slasher films, and I'm so excited that we have two of these games being made.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think that is going to be it for this show. Before we disappear, Garrett, can you please tell us where people can find more of you on the internet?
Ah, well, you can find all of the podcasts that I do at amove.tv. That's AMOVE.TV. Check it out, including Overwatches with me and you, Patrick.
Absolutely. New episode in just a couple of days with the return of the beta. So excited. We'll have everything that you need to know available there.
I'll be streaming the game with Kyle on Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/amovetv. I'm really looking forward to it.
I might be streaming a little bit as well. We'll see.
If you're awake at whatever ungodly hour that is for you, feel free to join us.
Yeah, 3 p.m. your time might be a little bit too late for me, but... Wait, Wednesday, 3 p.m.? What time is it for me? What time is it for you now?
It is 10:15.
So 5 hours later, it might work. Maybe.
Oh, it's not that bad. Where'd you move to again?
Finland, Helsinki.
Ah, okay, nice. I'm going to update my world clock right now to include Finland.
Thank you very much, sir. All right. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter and on Facebook. And you can find this show and another one called The Phileas Club at FrenchSpin.com. You can find my French language shows if, unlike Garrett, you enjoy other cultural elements of things on FrenchSpin.fr. What, Garrett?
I said, oh, man, going low there.
You can find that at FrenchSpin.fr. I thank you very much, dear listener, for listening, and we will talk to you again in a couple of weeks. Bye.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.